If you need to retake the MCAT, improvement is possible. You don't have to accept the score that you got. You need to work hard, be patient, and work on your foundation. Work on the foundational skills, and you'll notice improvement. If you go check out the MCAT CARS strategy course from Jack Wesson, a lot of his students are MCAT retakers, students who didn't understand the test the first time. Did you know there's a hard way and an easy way to go through these passages and questions? That's what Jack emphasizes in his MCAT CARS strategy course. There's office hours every week with Jack. Through this self-paced, structured course with homework every 2 weeks, you'll see massive improvements in your ability to understand the MCAT, which will hopefully translate into a better score. Go check out the MCAT CARS strategy course over at jackweston.com today.
The MCAT CARS podcast, session number 119. The CARS section of the MCAT gives thousands of pre-meds nightmares every night. Whether you're an ESL student, lack confidence while reading, or a slow reader like me, Jack Weston and the medical school headquarters are here to help you score higher in every section so you can be confident you're ready to get the MCAT score of your dreams. Welcome to the MCAT CARS podcast. My name is Dr. Ryan Gray. As always, I'm joined by Jack Weston from jackweston.com. If you're looking for some more help in your CARS prep, go to jackweston.com, sign up for his free daily CARS passages. We're going to jump into another great article here today to discern facts, assumptions, and opinions when you're reading for the CARS section as well as every other section. Jack Weston back for another MCAT CARS podcast recording. How are you doing?
Hey, Ryan. I'm good. How are you?
I am great. I am trying to learn some more about not destroying our biodiversity that we learned about last week. But still a little sad that basically money drives everything. If you're going to make money destroying the biodiversity, awesome. If you're going to make money by saving the biodiversity, great. We don't really care about biodiversity. We just care about making money. It's kind of sad, but
I know. Yeah.
What are you going to do? I'm excited for our future because I think millennials and Gen Zs, like they're very much put their money where their mouth is and support companies that do the right thing, I think.
Yeah. Social benefits. Yep. You know, I think it's really big on in Gen Z and just the future. So it's really promising, really cool to see.
Yeah. I'm excited for that. All right. What are we doing today?
So, you know, I kind of talked about opinions and conversations last week, and I think this week it's a great lesson on noticing facts as opinions.
Yeah.
Especially for history passages. This stumps a lot of students. They look at a passage, they go, well, all of this is factual, right? Like, how do I separate the facts from the opinions? And this is a good challenge because this passage provides you with opinions that may appear to be factual. So we'll talk about it as we go, but essentially, even facts can be arguable. You can argue facts. And I think that's a great lesson that can help you when you do history passages in the future.
Sounds like getting into politics, unfortunately. Alternative facts, but we'll see where we get here.
Right.
All right, first paragraph here. Pterosaurs, such as pterodactyl, are some of the largest animals ever to have taken to the skies. But the first reptile aviators were clumsy flyers, only capable of traveling short distances, a study suggests. All right, so talking about pterodactyls, that's fun. And a study suggesting that they weren't very good flyers.
Right. Well, I don't know about pterodactyl. I think pterodactyl was probably okay. It's suggesting the larger group, pterosaurs, right? So pterodactyl seems to fall under the pterosaur group or category.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about dinosaurs, but but based on how they write it, that's what it seems like is happening.
Yes.
So, exactly. So some reptile aviators seem to be clumsy, right?
Yep.
Okay.
This research may also shed new light on the evolution of flight more generally. All right, so we have this study looking at pterosaurs, and this author potentially saying, hey, we may learn how animals began to fly.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. Next paragraph. Pterosaurs evolved around 245 million years ago and dominated the skies for more than 150 million years before dying out at the end of the Cretaceous period, along with many of their dinosaur cousins. All right, so a little history lesson here about pterosaurs, how long they lived and when they lived and when they died.
Sounds good. It just reminds me of the Jurassic Park movies where you see the pterodactyl coming in and taking people away.
Yeah.
You know, scary stuff. Okay. Yeah.
They must have had a bad consultant because those were good flyers. Yeah. We'll see. With long membranous wings stretching from the ankles to an elongated fourth finger, pterosaurs are considered the earliest vertebrates to have evolved powered flight. All right, so a little bit of a history lesson and anatomy lesson as well about their wings and the earliest vertebrates to fly. But what did these first flights look like? That's the question. All right, so interesting little ending there because the author's like, they're flyers, but what did the actually flying mean, right? Was it a Wright Brothers, I got in the air for 100 yards? Or was it a F-16 flying the skies?
Right. Now, notice the author is questioning the history of how they began to fly.
Yep.
The first flyers. Yep. Do we know what pterosaurs first flew like? Like, do we know how they flew?
Well, I think they found some early video footage in the caves. yeah, no, we don't. Right?
A GoPro, maybe? Yeah. No, I mean, so that's the thing that stumps a lot of students. It's like, wait a second, isn't this factual? Like, first pterosaurs, like, sure, we know. No, we don't know. This was, what did they say? 245 million years ago?
Yeah.
Like, they're guessing. They're not saying that directly, but they're completely guessing, yep. Right? Just like everything else we guess about the universe, black holes, like how the universe started. Like, these are all guesswork, at least on a scientific scale. So I mean, be prepared to read something that seems historical, seems factual, but in reality is completely based on opinion.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I like that seems factual, right? Because something like this, the seems factual is as a collective, right? We as a collective have just come to the, for the most part, the same kind of understanding that, oh yeah, pterodactyls flew just like birds today, right? We just, everyone just kind of assumes that. We see that in movies, and so we don't really challenge that because it's we don't think about pterodactyls.
Yeah, and even like the Jurassic movies, right? I believe there was a paper or some sort of article that came out that said that the Jurassic movies got it wrong. They actually, all the dinosaurs are you know, have feathers.
Yep.
Right. So imagine a T-Rex with feathers.
Yeah.
Right. Instead of what we normally visualize a T-Rex to look like. Yep. I think we actually had our podcast article on that like a year ago.
Maybe, yeah.
So, you know, stuff like that is all based on opinion. There's no way they'll ever know. Unless maybe some sort of T-Rex got stuck in snow for, you know, millions of years.
In amber. And then we can extract its DNA and actually have a real Jurassic Park.
Right, Doc. Cool. Yeah. Okay, cool. All right, let's go.
Next paragraph. Professor Chris Venditti, a lecturer in evolutionary biology at the University of Reading, and his colleagues estimated the wing size and body mass of various pterosaurs from their fossilized remains and combined this with information about the metabolic rates of birds to calculate how much energy pterosaurs would have needed to fly and how far they could have glided before dropping to the ground. All right, so here's the educated guessing is here's how they created their educated guess is they're doing lots of measurements and comparing it to birds, like modern day birds, metabolic rates, and trying to estimate like is it even possible from an energy expenditure that they could have flown? Or I like the word that this author used, glided, right? I think a lot of people know of like these squirrels that quote unquote fly, but they're really just gliding.
Right. And they use the word calculate to sound more sophisticated, to sound like, oh, they're actually measuring things the right way.
Yeah.
Again, it's all guesswork. And why would the author not say we don't know, we're just guessing? Why wouldn't they just say directly suggest this?
Because people would stop reading.
Yeah. Yeah. The author wants to convince you of their opinion by making it seem factual. Like, if it's not confusing enough, right? You have to realize that this is all opinions that are trying to figure out facts. And by doing so, they try to make it look factual, right? So it's hiding the fact that it's an opinion. And that is the problem for many students. Okay.
That's the problem for most of society, not being able to critically read things anymore to go, is this true or not?
Yeah. And it's hard because when you're force-fed information that completely goes against reality, your reality shifts.
Yep.
Your interpretation of reality is totally different now. Yeah.
Yep. All right, next paragraph. This revealed that, though airborne, the earliest pterosaurs are likely to have been ungainly aviators. So ungainly, I don't know specifically what that word means, but it sounds like ugly, right? They're ugly aviators. So not very good at it, not very pretty. So
yeah. Probably good guess there, yeah.
Yeah, so answering that question, right? What did these first flights look like? Well, didn't look very good, potentially. They would have been flying, but relatively clumsily. All right, so there's that definition there for us.
Yep, ungainly probably means clumsy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They may have been climbing up trees and flying from one trunk to another, but not flying very long distances and not very agile in their flight. All right, so I think I can picture, right, this pterodactyl climbing up a tree and jumping and spreading its wings to go a little bit further to get to the next tree to go chase some food.
Sounds good. Again, we don't know, but we're guessing that they weren't good flyers, at least when they started off.
Yep. I stopped that sentence there. Said Venditti, whose research was published in Nature. All right, so just ending that sentence. All right, next paragraph here. Later pterosaurs were not only bigger, but their wings gradually became longer relative to their size, increasing their efficiency. They would have been big and graceful flyers that soared through the air, maybe even migrating hundreds of kilometers, Venditti said. All right, so looking at the anatomy of different pterosaurs, later pterosaurs as they evolved, they had bigger wings, which would make flight much easier for their bodies.
Okay, so did Jurassic Park get pterodactyls right?
Depends on which pterodactyls they were referring to. The later pterosaurs or the early pterosaurs?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, they could have, right, based on this person's opinion,
yeah.
Right? So, yeah, sounds good.
It's interesting, right? The thinking about pterosaurs and big birds in general, there's, I don't know if you've seen, maybe this was a podcast that we did together too, about why humans are like when we're outside and there's a shadow that comes across us, like there's some supposedly some instinctual kind of innate fear of that. And a lot of early skulls that they find have big claw marks in like the orbital bone of skulls, and how like little kids would be taken by these big birds and eaten. And so it's very, like, very interesting. I grew up in Florida, and you're always taught to like keep the dogs away from the lake so that the gators don't get them. And like, just to think, however many years ago, 100,000 years ago, 200,000 years ago, little kids with big enough birds that would come take your kid away.
Right. Yeah. That's a really interesting response to how maybe, you know, why we're afraid of the dark or why we're afraid of shadows.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense from an evolutionary standpoint.
Yeah. Very interesting. Another awesome article here, really breaking down, trying to understand. And I think I like the challenging assumptions, right? It's very, very similar to what the kind of lay public gets very frustrated with food science, because food science is always like, one day salt is bad for you, the next day salt is good for you, the next day, right? And that's just, that's science evolving in front of our eyes. And especially with COVID-19, the public got very frustrated with science unfolding in front of our eyes to say, well, we think this and let's go study it. Oh, no, we were wrong. Now we think this. Oh, no, we're still wrong. Now we think this. And the public thinks that scientists are a bunch of buffoons. But in reality, like, that's science. You make assumptions, right? You have your hypothesis. You go test it. You come to a conclusion and go, yep, that's right, that's wrong. Or you get it right. And then you go, okay, these other researchers go test what we did. And they're like, we couldn't confirm that. And so you go back to the drawing board. Like, that's science. That's the fun part about it.
I mean, that's why medicine values research so much, yeah, right? Because when you research stuff, you figure things out slowly, gradually, especially when you have other people from the field contributing their insights, right? So yeah, exactly. I think that's a really big, important point to make about science. It's not exact. You know, yeah, it's never exact. I mean, when I grew up, Pluto was a planet, right?
So that's not science. That's just an assumption. That's just like a bunch of people are like, it's too small to be a planet. Let's call it something else.
Exactly. But you know, you get the point, right? Like, people change their minds. It's okay to change your mind, even about science. And that's blasphemy from a student's perspective, because you're taught gravity acts a certain way, this is what happens when,
I would be careful with saying it's okay to change your mind about science, because if we have 100 articles all saying one thing, like, that's the gold standard. And then one crazy person comes along and says, oh no, it's different. Like, let's investigate it. But if we come to the same conclusion that that's wrong, then we don't just change our mind about that.
Right. No, we don't. But what I'm trying to say is that as you read science articles, it's okay to see them as once an opinion, right? Having this mindset that things can change potentially, not saying that you should change your mind, but that you could potentially change your mind, is important in science, I think. You know, so definitely go with what most people say, but have your own opinion about things and question things, and just stay, stay relevant to whatever is going on today, and don't just stick to what we learned in the past. Right?
Yeah. And I think that's the key point, especially as students are coming up, reading research articles, journal articles, understanding that this is one data point, right? This is one study that doesn't prove anything. It's one study that comes to some conclusions. And now we need to wait for the next study that confirms those conclusions, and another study that confirms those conclusions. And then we can start to say, okay, this is it, right? Now we're starting to see a clear picture here. I think a lot of people jump to conclusions with, let's talk about like the COVID-19 vaccine. A lot of people we're saying, right, once you get the vaccine, still wear masks. And we're not saying still wear masks because the vaccine doesn't work, or still wear masks because whatever, right? We're saying still wear masks because we're not sure yet. We haven't studied that yet. So let's keep doing some research. And there's some early data that shows it's actually very effective in preventing asymptomatic disease as well. But again, that's one study. So let's continue to wear masks until we get more data and all this other stuff. So I love challenging my family when they're like, look, this is the truth. I'm like, that's one data point. let's wait for some more data.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the fun part of medicine and science, is that constantly challenging the status quo. I talk about that all the time, of why research is important for a medical school application. It doesn't have to be necessarily medical research. It's, are you comfortable challenging the status quo by continuing to ask questions and continuing to use the scientific method to challenge things and learn things?
Right. It's so crazy for most students who just start medicine to realize that they can have an immediate impact if they study something more than everyone else in the field, and they do a research experiment that's well organized. You could impact everyone's opinion or everyone's judgment on your field. And you know, research is great for many reasons. It's not just great for the fact that you're contributing to society, right? I mean, that's, I think that's an obvious thing. But most importantly, it shows that you're collaborative. I mean, it shows that you can work as a team, as a unit to figure things out. I mean, the most important articles are published by many people, not just one. And it takes a lot of effort to organize content and ideas and thoughts and express it in a way that anyone can understand it. And, you know, I think research is an awesome field. Obviously, you should do research in something that you're interested in. But yeah, it's, you know, hopefully more students will go into that and figure it out.
All right, so there you have it. It's another great episode for you. Again, breaking down some passages, or a passage, an article here for you to help you really understand what you are reading, how to read for the MCAT. Don't forget to go to jackweston.com, sign up for his free daily Cars passages. Did I mention they're free? Free daily Cars passages, jackweston.com. Have a great week. We'll see you next time here on the MCAT Cars Podcast.
This is MedEd Media.